Worse news, Khrushchev's revelations and Hungary. Socialists have generally been willing to grant that possibly, just possibly, capitalist economic production would outstrip socialist production. But no socialist has ever been willing to grant that capitalism can hold a candle to socialism morally. Socialism is driven more than anything else by an ethic of altruism, by a conviction that morality is about selflessness, being willing to put others' needs before one's own, and, when necessary, being willing to sacrifice oneself for others, especially those others who are weaker and needier. Thus, to a socialist, any socialist nation has to be morally superior to any capitalist nation. Socialist leaders are, by definition, concerned primarily about the needs of their citizens and are sensitively responsive to their expressions of concern, their grievances, and, where there are troubles, to their plights. The year 1956 dealt two blows to that faith. The second blow came late in the year, in October, with the bloody suppression of a revolt in the Soviet satellite state of Hungary. Strong dissatisfaction with chronic economic troubles and with being under the thumb of Moscow led to demonstrations and outbreaks of physical resistance to authority by Hungarian workers, students, and others. The Soviet response was swift and brutal. The tanks and the troops were sent in, demonstrators and their organizers were killed and executed, and the revolt was suppressed. The lesson to the Hungarians was administered before a worldwide audience. Dissent is not allowed. Shut up, put up with it, and obey. The first blow, however, delivered in February of 1956, was the one that had the most devastating impact on the future of left socialism. In a secret speech to the 20th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, Nikita Khrushchev made a sensational revelation of the crimes of Stalin's era. In the name of the future of socialism, Stalin had had millions of his own citizens tortured, subjected to inhuman deprivations, executed, or sent to die in Siberian labor camps. What had been dismissed as capitalist propaganda was now revealed as true by the leader of the socialist world. The flagship socialist nation was guilty of horrors on an unimaginable scale. Khrushchev's shocking revelations caused a moral crisis among the socialist left. Could it be true? Or, hopefully, could it be that Khrushchev was exaggerating or lying to score political points? Or, more sinisterly, had the leader of the socialist world become a stooge for the CIA, that sneaky agent of capitalist imperialism? But, if Khrushchev's revelations were even partially true, then how could such horrors have happened under socialism? Is it possible that there is some flaw in socialism itself? No, of course not. And then, of course, what about those gloating capitalists, hatefully saying, "I told you so"? Schisms developed immediately within far-left circles over the proper response to the revelations. Was the Soviet Union not the socialist ideal? Or was Khrushchev a betrayer of the cause? Some extreme true believers took the position that Khrushchev was a traitor, and that in any case, anything that Stalin had done was no reflection upon socialism. That line became harder to maintain as time went on and more revelations about life in the Soviet Union came forth, confirming in gritty detail what Khrushchev had said. Alexander Solzhenitsyn's The Gulag Archipelago, first published in the West in 1973, was the most widely read and condemnatory. Solzhenitsyn's book drew upon extensive research and Solzhenitsyn's own first-hand experience of 8 years imprisonment in the labor camps for the crime of having written in 1945 a letter critical of Stalin's regime. As it became impossible to believe in the morality of the Soviet Union, a shrinking contingent of true believers shifted their devotions, first to communist China under Mao. But then came revelations of even worse horrors in China in the 1960s, including 30 million deaths between 1959 and 1961. Then Cuba was the great hope, and then Vietnam, then Cambodia, then Albania for a while in the late 1970s, and then Nicaragua in the 1980s. But the data and the disappointments piled up, all dealing a solid and devastating blow to socialism's ability to claim a moral sanction. One such set of summary data is reproduced below in the form of a table comparing liberal democratic, authoritarian, and totalitarian governments in terms of one measure of morality, the number of their own citizens those governments have killed. Deaths from democide compared to deaths from international war, 1900 to 1987. Killed by own government. Democratic nations, 2 million people. Authoritarian nations, 29 million people. Totalitarian nations, 138 million people. Communist governments account for 110 million of the deaths in the totalitarian category. Killed by international war. Democratic nations, 4.4 million. Authoritarian nations, 15.3 million. Totalitarian nations, 14.4 million. Included in the totalitarian killed by own government cell are the 10 to 12 million human beings killed by the German National Socialists in the period 1933 to 1945. Subtracting that number from 138 million, along with subtracting a few million killed by miscellaneous totalitarian regimes, means that over 110 million human beings were killed by the governments of nations inspired by left, primarily Marxist socialism. The true believers aside, few far-left socialists waited until after the 1950s to see what further damning data would come forth. In France, for example, most French intellectuals had joined the Communist Party in the 1950s, including Michel Foucault, or had become at least very strong sympathizers, as did Jacques Derrida. Foucault became dissatisfied with the self-stultification that party membership required. Quote, "Being obliged to stand behind a fact that was totally beyond credibility was part of that exercise of the dissolution of the self, of the quest for a way to be other," unquote. And so, as Derrida reports, many began to drift away. Quote, "For many of us, a certain, and I emphasize certain, end of communist Marxism did not await the recent collapse of the USSR and everything that depends on it throughout the world. All that started, all that was even déjà vu, indubitably, at the beginning of the 50s," unquote. The crises of the 1950s were enough for most left intellectuals worldwide to recognize that the case for socialism was in serious trouble economically and morally, and they realized that making the case for socialism was being made doubly difficult by the fact that the capitalist countries were doing well economically and, for the most part, going in the right direction morally. It is hard to argue with prosperity, and it is hard to make stick any qualms one has about capitalism's moral status when confronted with the revelations about the horrible and very real failings of socialism in practice. Some left intellectuals retreated into despair. Quote, "The millennium has been canceled," unquote, wrote socialist historian Edward Hyams, ending on a note of resignation. But for many theoreticians of the far left, the crisis meant only that more radical responses to capitalism were needed.